Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take your sources, the documents you send us, and really get into them, unpack the key stuff so you don't have to.
That's the idea.
Today, we're diving into a pretty detailed PDF you showed. It lays out some specific allegations against the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, AFCA, related to one particular case.
Right. And our mission here really is to explore the claims made in this document.
Mm-hmm.
It's from an individual, Michael Sanderson, and we'll focus on the specific examples the source gives.
Mm-hmm.
It's about trying to understand, you know, his experience with the financial dispute process and why the source is claiming, well, maladministration.
And I'm here with our expert guide to help us navigate through what looks like some pretty complex material.
Thank you to be here.
So the source focuses on a case. It involves a company, Styx Holdings PDLTD. Michael okay. Sanderson is a director there, the Bank of Queensland, BOQ, and then this determination made by AFCA.
Yeah. And the core claim, the central argument of the document, is that AFCA's decision in this whole thing was, well, fundamentally flawed. Unfair, basically.
Okay. And there's something that jumps out early on in the document, doesn't it? About the borrower, Styx.
Yeah, it's quite striking. The source claims that Styx, the borrower, they consistently paid on time. And maybe surprisingly, it says they actually had the means to pay off the entire debt without even selling assets.
Really? Without selling assets?
That's what the source states. But despite that, you know, things escalated into this whole big dispute resolution mess.
Okay, so let's unpack the main argument the source is making against AFCA here. It alleges AFCA breached its own rules.
That's the core allegation, yeah. That in handling this specific case, AFCA didn't act fairly. It claims they didn't properly consider the relevant law or, you know, follow good industry practice.
And the source connects this to a bigger picture.
It does. It suggests AFCA engages in maladministration. And a key point raised is that this kind of approach, allegedly, just makes banks dig their heels in,
right.
Makes them intransigent.
Right. Less willing to negotiate.
Exactly. And that limits access to justice for people, for consumers,
yeah.
Who genuinely believe an AFCA decision is wrong. And in this specific case, the document says BOQ is just pointing to the AFCA determination and saying, nope, conversation over, won't engage further.
And this is where that access to justice point really bites, according to the source.
Yeah, because the document highlights this major challenge. The only way it mentions to review an AFCA determination like this is the courts.
Which is expensive.
Hugely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the document emphasizes the individual just doesn't have the financial capacity to go down that road. So the source argues this lack of affordable review sort of creates a sense of impunity. It affects how dispute resolution works both inside the banks and externally with bodies like AFCA.
Okay. So to back this up, the source gives specific examples.
Yes. It focuses on three main examples to illustrate these claims, though it mentions there are others. Let's dig into that first one.
All right. Example one. This is the allegation that AFCA ignored or maybe even misrepresented its own internal advice about serviceability.
Exactly. Serviceability, basically, could the borrower actually afford to repay the loan? That's the heart of it.
So what happened here, according to the document?
Well, according to the source, there was this key internal AFCA document, an internal AFCA serviceability assessment. The individual only got a copy, partially redacted, after the final AFCA decision came down.
After, not before.
Right. The source says they'd asked for it earlier. It was mentioned in the preliminary assessment, but the request was refused then. So the upshot, according to the document, was no chance to see it, let alone challenge it, before the final ruling.
Okay, so they finally get this document. What did it actually say, according to the source?
The document quotes some pretty key points from it. It apparently acknowledged that another company, Sashlake Pitty LTD, the source calls it, SPD LTD, had, well, no relationship with BOQ.
None at all.
Didn't bank with them, nothing. And significantly, it made no undertaking, no promise to BOQ about helping service this loan.
And the internal expert's view on BOQ's actions.
The quote in the source is that BOQ failed to display the care and skill of a prudent and diligent banker by not linking the profits of SPD LTD by taking a guarantee.
So the internal view was critical of the bank's practice.
Seems so, based on the source material. There are other quotes too, like a prudent lender would have directly linked the revenue stream by interlocking guarantees.
Okay.
And it calls it poor banking practice to let the interest-only period continue without a review once the bank knew about the sale of a business back in 2009. The expert also apparently noted the bank could have exercised greater skill and care by linking the cash flow source for debt servicing directly to the loan.
So quite specific criticisms in that internal document as presented in the source. Now, how does the source claim AFCA actually handled this? And what about the borrower's side of things?
Well, the source states the borrower made it clear from the start in their complaint that their understanding was BOQ's calculations were based only on Styx's income, not this other company, SPI Ltd. But AFCA's preliminary assessment mentioned the bank's calculation, which did seem to include other income, resulting in a $12,098 annual net group cash surplus. And it also mentioned AFCA's own independent assessment, concluding the credit wasn't inappropriate based on expected property revenue.
So AFCA mentioned its own assessment, but the source alleges they then ignored key parts of it, especially the bit matching the borrower's point.
That's the allegation, that the case manager and the panel ignored the borrower's position and ignored AFCA's own internal assessment findings, specifically that FPD Ltd. gave no undertaking and including its income like this was inappropriate practice.
Even though the report they did apparently rely on flagged serviceability as marginal in the first year.
Exactly. So the source concludes, you know, how could AFCA be thorough, impartial, independent, or fair? The claim is they cherry-picked the bits they liked from the report and, crucially, hid the difficult parts from the complainant while the decision was being made.
And the source mentions a forensic accountant disputed AFCA's methodology, too.
Yeah, adding another layer. It claims a forensic accountant challenged the approach AFCA's assessor used for serviceability.
And the impact on the borrower, this lack of transparency.
The source claims that because the borrower didn't know how BOQ was really calculating serviceability relying on this SPDL LTD income, they hadn't guaranteed they made commercial decisions based on a false premise. Decisions, the source says, BOQ later used against them.
Okay, that's a heavy claim. Let's move to the second example, the source details. This one's about a property valuation.
Yeah, she just focused to the property securing the loan. The allegation here is that AFCA misrepresented the findings of an independent expert report about the property's value.
Okay, give us the background on the valuation itself.
So according to the document, the bank, BOQ, relied on a valuation from a firm called Propel National Valuers. Now, the source makes a point of saying that BOQ actually took this same firm to court later over an alleged overvaluation around the same time.
Oh, interesting context.
Yeah. And this specific valuation, the one for the loan, allegedly showed a massive 240% increase. It jumped from $375,000, the purchase price only 14 months earlier, up to $900,000.
Wow. 375K to 900K in 14 months? That's significant.
Very. Especially from a firm the bank later had issues with, according to the source. So then there's this independent report the source talks about.
Who commissioned that?
It was engaged, unsolicited apparently, by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman ASBFEO. Both BOQ and Styx gave info to this independent expert for their review.
Got it. So ASBSEO gets an independent expert to look at this valuation. How did AFCA summarize that expert's report in its preliminary assessment, according to the source document?
The source quotes ASEA's summary. It apparently said the review concluded the 2007 valuation of $900,000 was completed after the development consent, completed as instructed, and supported with the evidence drawn from a wide range of sales. Seems pretty straightforward, right?
Sounds like AFCA was saying the report validated the valuation, but I'm guessing the source provides more detail.
You guessed right. The source then quotes the actual independent assessor's conclusions and highlights, well, some pretty big discrepancies with AFCA's summary.
Okay, what were they?
Well, yes, the assessor confirmed the report was done as instructed and after the development consent, but they also noted some major issues. The specific report format used by Propel described as inappropriate for large land parcels like this one.
Inappropriate format? Why?
More suited for standard urban residential property, apparently. And because of that, it limits the communication of risks. That's a direct quote from the source about the report.
Okay, that sounds important. What else?
The assessor also flagged that using an englobal valuation, valuing it all as one lump sum, was outside the parameters of the reporting format and, crucially, could lead to underreporting of market risks.
Underreporting risks?
Mm-hmm. They did state the large value increase, the $525,000 jump in 14 months. But the key finding the source really hammers home, quoting the independent report, is this. The risk analysis by BOQ and the extended parties, including mortgage insurers, did not respond at an early stage to this mainly unexplained increase in value and the way in which it was assessed.
So the independent report actually flagged a lack of response to the unexplained value jump and the assessment method. Sounds quite different from AFCA's summary.
Very different, according to the source, which is why the source is so blunt here. It says, No reasonable person could conclude that AFCA was thorough, impartial, independent, or fair. It alleges AFCA knowingly and deliberately verbaled and misrepresented what the expert actually found.
Verbaled. Strong words.
Yeah. And the source adds that AFCA ignored the flawed valuation the loan was based on and relevant law, making things worse.
And the practical impact of this alleged misrepresentation and the overvaluation?
The document claims Styx was essentially unwittingly trapped by BOQ's overvaluation. Because the value was inflated, the loan-to-value ratio looked bad on paper, meaning they didn't have enough apparent equity to refinance with another lender and get away from BOQ.
Trapped. Okay. Let's tackle the third specific example from the source. This one's about the loan application itself, a business lending application, or BLA.
Yes. The allegation here is pretty fundamental, that a key document, the BLA, was either blank or somehow falsified, and AFCA didn't investigate it properly despite its importance.
When did the borrower actually see this document?
According to the source, Styx only became aware of this BLA for the very first time, quite late in the game, January 2015. They got it in an email from BOQ's lawyers.
So years after the loan was originated, what was AFCA's take on this document, according to the source?
Well, the source notes AFCA did acknowledge its importance during the investigation. They apparently stated something like, the BTL business term loan could not have been advanced without a signed application.
Okay, so they knew it was necessary.
Right, but then, according to the source, AFCA just dropped it. Didn't pursue the inquiry into the document's date or validity, and didn't mention the anomaly again in the final determination.
So what was wrong with the document? How does the source describe it? It mentions an affidavit from a BOQ officer.
Yeah, allegedly sworn in an affidavit. The source describes this BLA as basically blank in all the crucial parts.
How?
Like, no request for finance, no business details, no summary of business financial position, no details of loan security, even no details of owner-director or their financial position. Just blank sections where all that should be.
Wow. All those key sections were empty. That's a major claim.
It is. And the source points out other odd things, too. It was apparently not dated by the alleged signatories. There was allegedly a line of text missing above the signatures, consistent with a dodgy cut-and-paste job.
Cut-and-paste? Seriously? No.
That's the claim. And there was a handwritten note on the blank page saying, as per submission, 140108. But the source notes that date is after the date the document supposedly relates to and asks, how can you sign or attest to a blank document anyway?
So lots of alleged red flags with this core document. What does the source say about AFCA's response to these specifics?
The allegation is that AFCA basically ignored most, if not all, of these factual issues. The case manager, the panel. Mm. The source claims they overlooked these inconsistencies in both the preliminary assessment and the final determination.
And didn't explain why.
Exactly. The document asks why AFCA didn't properly investigate it and give written reasons for seemingly ignoring these pretty glaring inconsistencies.
And the source's conclusion on this BLA point.
It's pretty stark. No reasonable person would come to the conclusion that the BLA was a legitimate or legal document and would be acceptable in any circumstance to AFCA or BOQ. It really questions the very foundation of the loan documentation as presented in the source.
Okay, so we've gone through these three really specific examples the source uses. The internal serviceability advice, the expert valuation report, and now this blank loan application. How does the source tie all this together in terms of the overall experience and outcome?
Well, it outlines what happened after the AFCA determination. The source claims BOQ offered what it calls $50,000 shut-up and go-away money.
Which was rejected.
Rejected, yes. And the individual apparently made a counteroffer, used that money to get an independent legal opinion from a barrister of his choice. BOQ allegedly rejected that, too.
Which brings us right back to that access to justice point the source raised earlier.
Absolutely. The source really emphasizes this. There's no mechanism for merits review outside the courts. No way to challenge the substance of an AFCA decision unless you can afford to go to court.
And the courts are unaffordable and out of reach for this individual.
That's what the document states. It presents this as a fundamental roadblock. If you think AFCA got it wrong on the merits on the substance, where do you go if you can't afford court? It's presented as a dead end.
The source also mentioned the Notesco case, didn't it? How does that fit in?
Yes, it brings that up. It points out that in March 2022, Justice Kelly Rees did overturn an AFCA ruling in the case Notesco PAA LTDV AFCA, and the source highlights the reason given was specifically an absence of impartiality and independence in that case.
So using it as an example.
Exactly. The source uses Notesco to support its argument that, look, these kinds of fundamental issues can happen at AFCA, and when people do manage the rare feat of getting a case reviewed by the courts, problems have sometimes been found.
Right. So wrapping all these threads from the source document together, the claim is that these three examples and others mentioned show why, in this specific instance, AFCA's process was flawed.
That's the assertion, that AFCA engaged in misconduct, wasn't fair, didn't follow the law or good practice, essentially, maladministration in this case, leading to an unjust outcome.
It's certainly a very detailed account from this one individual's perspective laid out in the document you shared, focusing on specific alleged flaws in the process.
Yeah, claims about mishandled evidence, ignored internal advice, misrepresented reports, all leading, in the source's view, to an unfair determination with, crucially, no affordable way to challenge it on its merits. That's the picture painted by the source.
Okay, this has definitely been a deep dive into some pretty dense material. We focused entirely on the specific allegations and examples presented in your source document.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at the source's claims of AFCA maladministration, unfairness, ignoring the law, and good practice. We detailed the points raised about that internal serviceability advice, the allegedly misrepresented expert valuation, and those big questions around the apparently blank loan application.
And we highlighted the source's view on that huge challenge, the lack of affordable review options outside the court system. That's presented as a central barrier in the story told by this document.
So, considering these detailed allegations from your source, the claims about hidden assessments, twisted expert views, dodgy paperwork, all within a system where review is allegedly out of reach. What does this specific case, as presented here, highlight about the potential hurdles individuals might face, especially when they're up against complex financial disputes and trying to find what they see as impartial resolution?
It certainly gives you a lot to think about, reflecting on the process described in this document.